Okay, I gave a list of 10 questions when I arrived, and I told Chris by telephone before I arrived that I'd give a list of 10 questions and I might get through the first half of the first one. And it turns out that that was right. That's the only thing I've done right while I've been here, but that prediction right.
How much time did Chris give you?
Oh, that was 3 weeks, basically. I wrote it. Oh, you'll see. Right. So I basically thought a bit about what is the dispersion and what is the origin of these log normal with power law distributions that we see for the IMF and that we see in the PDFs of the simulations, essentially. And just quickly summarizing, in the isothermal case, when you look at the PDFs, you get a beautiful log normal distribution. But when you do the adiabatic cases, it's something of a mystery as to why you get power laws. I don't think anyone has understood that. Maybe Paolo has, but nobody else has. These are very famous distributions. There are these heavy tail distributions that you get when you look at, say, the IMF. And there has been some recent work on it in astrophysics. And essentially, these types of distributions go under the title of Levy distributions, Levy Pareto distributions, and more recently, double Pareto and even double log normal Pareto distributions. And this is an enormous area of research in statistical physics at the moment. And it's been a pleasure reading these papers. But perhaps the most important one is Gwynn et al., who've managed to understand a long-standing problem. I think it's three decades old at least, in terms of looking at interstellar scintillation. And they came to the realization that if they did not make the Gaussian assumption for the distribution of the electron densities, etc., in the interstellar medium, but they used one of these more profound distributions, then they could explain this long-standing problem. And I refer you to that paper. It's very beautiful. Then I noticed when looking at, now you can search on the web and find if anyone said anything at all about these things. And Basu and Jones did mildly touch on getting the IMF in this sort of way, but they didn't actually know that they were doing this. But they mentioned it to Reed, who pointed out his work, which I'm going to get to, which is actually quite important on these double log normal Pareto distributions. And then in GRB timing, Quilligan et al. Have shown that when you look at the timing distribution between pulses in GRBs, that it's a log normal with a tail, one of these heavy tails. Now, that's the astro that I could find that's been done, and this is the only really significant piece of work in astro. There's been other stuff in space physics, of course. But an early and very much quoted and important paper was Takayasu, who looked at this whole Levy distribution idea in terms of a description of turbulence, and a very important paper by Montrol and Schlesinger on 1 over S noise, and also how that you would generate these tails on top of a log normal distribution in a way that's extremely physical. Then a brilliant young graduate student wrote a paper for, I think, his Harvard thesis on this subject, and I'm going to refer to that in a minute. And so why are we all interested in this? Well, you know that Gaussian distributions can be derived from the central limit theorem. For example, if a Gaussian depends on a very large number of additive variables, then if you take the central limit theorem, you get a Gaussian. And you get the log normal if they're multiplicative variables. But of course, this isn't the most general distribution. The most general distribution are the stable Levy distributions, which have power law tails, which go as x to the minus 1 plus alpha, where alpha varies between 0 and 2. And you can make the central limit theorem in a much more general way about the for the stable Levy distributions. And this was proved in 1953 by Kolmogorov and Nedenko. Okay. So probably most of this doesn't mean anything to you yet, but let me go to some actual simulations, which I'm sure you know and love. These were simulations that Keiichi Wada did when we were working together on the global structure of the multiphase interstellar medium, and there it is. It's got a colossal dynamic range in temperature and density, etc., and it's similar to a number of the simulations that have been constructed here, although, you know, it is for the inner regions of a galaxy size of a few kiloparsecs, and it is in three dimensions. So it's a fairly heroic effort by Wada to do this. And we found that in general, with our equation of state, which was definitely not isothermal, we found that you actually got a log normal PDF at the bottom here. It was never clear what actually happened down here because the errors get significant. But up here, it really did look like it had gone into something much more flattened and interesting. And we could never actually explain this. And we could never, in fact, explain the dispersion. I know that Paolo and others got the dispersion for their isothermal simulations was a logarithm of 1 plus beta m squared, right, where beta was a number of the order of a half. But when we looked at this, we couldn't actually get it, right? We couldn't get that one. And our equation of state is definitely not isothermal. We have a multiphase, you know, interstellar medium. This is also true of the work of Ostreicher and others. There's no definite answer for the magnetized case. And in the unmagnetized and adiabatic case, let's see, Vasquez, Semedini, and Passo got power law tails to this log normal, and so did Scalo et al. In the late 90s. But when I looked, so these are the most quoted papers on this particular point, but when I looked at them, I really hope that someone will do it again. You know, it's 10 years later, and, you know, they look pretty primitive calculations compared to what can be done now. And it would be very interesting to see whether you for the polytropic case, for the adiabatic case, where you get the power law not so the famous, you know, Levy-type power law tail, not the distribution. Yeah, complete. It's self-gravity. Yep.
Because self-gravity does generate the power law tail below that.
Yeah, but not here.
Maybe you don't see it.
No. No, we went into that.
It's too weak here.
No, it's not too weak.
Okay.
Sorry, these are much better simulations than you can imagine. Okay, so I can't type on words, so I just lifted things out of texts. This is from the Wada-Norman paper. We were very interested in these Levy distributions at the time, and this is the basic distribution. This is the basic Levy distribution. If this is alpha here, if alpha is 2, if alpha is 2, then it's just a Gaussian distribution. If alpha is very small, it's a log normal distribution. And so we looked. We looked very hard for fits to Levy distributions, because, as I said, they're far more general than just your standard normal and log normal. But we couldn't do it, right? It may well be because it's multiphase and the effect of shocks, etc., which I'm going to go into in a minute, gives you small alpha at small densities, and that would fit it very nicely because it's definitely a log normal at small to moderate densities. And then as you go to higher densities, you know, it becomes isothermal and fits quite well. But we couldn't actually do it. But we did say that it would be great if someone could do it. So that's why I thought about it at this meeting. I'm someone, right? Wada's doing much more important things, like simulating the galaxy at the moment to 10 solar mass resolution.
Okay. Our galaxy.
Yes, our galaxy. Right, they've got a special machine they're building in Japan to do this by 2010, so watch out, guys. Right. So this is the just to motivate it. This is the famous Chabrier mass function, and here's the fit. And what's nice about this is it's got the power law on it from Padawan and Nordland. So you can see it's a log normal with exactly this structure, this power law tail structure, and this is what is it? It's 2.35 or something like that. What I don't remember. It depends. Beta was 2.2, I think, in your calculations. Is that right? Yeah, okay. So something like that. And so this is a strong motivator. Now, here's the physics, which was done beautifully by which may apply to this. So Chris and I have been working on this. Everything that I say that it's right is due to Chris. Right, the rest is probably wrong, so that's due to me, right? And I'm sure he's probably listening. But this is the physics from Montrol and Schlesinger of what we've actually been examining. So you take your log normal distribution, and then in a step, you compress it or do something to it so that the mean value is amplified to n times the previous value, all right? So you get a distribution function which just gets a mean, which is multiplied by n. Okay, it's like you're being hit by a shock. So if you're being hit by an isothermal shock, that would go as m squared. If you're being hit by an adiabatic shock, it would go as 4. Adiabatic 5/3 shock, it would go as 4. So then you do it again, and you do it again. So you just keep shocking the material. So it might apply to something like turbulence. So you do this, and then you find you just go through this, and you find that when you solve it, that you actually end up solving this equation for a fixed point. So you have this process, and you say, well, what is the limit? When does it become stable? This is actually the stationary solution. So G of this must equal this, and then you find there's just power law solutions. And the power law solutions, so this is the origin of the tail. You've just shocked the material a number of times, and the power law solution goes as -1 minus mu. So if it's saltpeter, then it would be, or whatever, it would be something close to 1.5. 1.35. And mu is actually the probability that per unit step that you'll actually do it, 1 over that, divided by the compression factor. Okay. And when you put in the numbers, which I did, or not numbers, but when you have an isothermal system, then mu will be very much less than 1. If you have high Mach number shocks, then you can see very quickly mu will be less than 1, and you will just get a log normal distribution. But if it's adiabatic and the amplification is only the order of a few and maximal 4, the gamma is 5/3, then mu will be more like the order of 1 and the distribution will be of order 2. Now, it's the PDF of density in this case, but it applies to many things. How did this all get motivated? Well, Pareto, who started all this, was an economist, and he looked at the distributions of people's incomes, and he found they're all beautifully distributed. There's a lovely log normal distribution, except for the richest. Right? And the richest people have a power law distribution. And it's most interesting. Nobody quite understands why this is true, but it's as though the more spectacular people have a much bigger effect. That is, the example given in this paper, which was written in the 60s or 70s, was that, you know, the Beatles, when they put out a record, it sold much more. You know, it sold very many more millions of copies than you would normally expect, even if they were rich, right, and famous. So there's this nonlinear additional effect. Now, for the distribution of incomes, and this actually applies to our income distribution today. So the people who live on Hope Ranch are actually in this three halves distribution, the power law tail. The people who wander around here and think about physics are definitely in the log normal distribution. Okay. And so, but in terms of distributions of masses of stars, just remember, they're very close to the salary distribution of normal people. This would be, instead of 1.5, it's 1.35. Okay. Now, the generalization of all this is fascinating. It's that you can regard the process, this is called the Ito-Levy decomposition, and probably only Carl knows what I'm talking about at the moment, but you actually look at how you generate these Levy statistics and associated statistics. So what you're actually doing is you're more or less random walking in a Brownian motion way, and you also you can have what's called some drift. So this is sort of a drift term. This is like m dot is going as m, for example, if you're dealing with mass, plus some Brownian motion random walk term. And you get, when you do all this, and Chris and I even actually derive this in some tortuous way, but very interesting physical way, that when you do this for shocks hitting clumps and clouds and things like that, that at any given time, if you just look at the build-up of these things, they continuously get shocked, you get this log normal distribution. And what Reed did in the early part of this century was to say something else. He said, okay, we've got this, but let's assume that there's a distribution of sort of lifetimes. And he was thinking about income distribution again. I think people who think about income distribution get paid a lot more than astrophysicists. But what does it mean for us? So we have this ensemble of clouds, clumps, cores, whatever. I don't understand what they are, but I know that the fundamental physics must be the same for all of them. That we say that in a given cloud, for example, all these things are doing their own thing. They're growing, they're being shocked, their density's going up. And that we then say that there'll be a general lifetime for the whole ensemble, but for each little bit, we'll say there's a statistical distribution of lifetimes, and it's basically Poisson. And if you do that, it's quite remarkable. If you just do this, you say Poisson distribution of lifetimes for my growing shocks. It's not a. It's as though the whole there's a destruction term, right, which is 1 over lambda. Then when you do it, an exact solution of this is very similar to Montreux and Schlesinger's argument that I just gave you. You get two power laws, that's why it's called the double Pareto distribution. You get a power law which falls off at high rho and another one which is slopes up at small density. So this is the double log normal Pareto. It looks like a log normal with power laws at both ends. And and one thing I think may be right, and this is my last slide. Why aren't there any questions?
That's worrisome.
Yeah, very worrying. Nobody understood what I was saying. I think that the mu in this case. It takes me back to when we all used to work on particle acceleration before most of you were born. I think this mu is in fact something like the acceleration time or the shock growth time divided by the destruction time. And you can see that in these clouds and in many physical systems, for example, in particle acceleration, just can be of order unity. And if that is, then you get something very close to saltpeter. You actually get one, not 1.35. And I think that's all I have to say. Yes, Paolo, good.
Two things I don't understand, kind of. First of all,
yep.
I haven't seen the founder of physics. I know, I mean, these are interesting statistics, and they have interesting, beautiful shapes.
Oh, right. So you want to know why.
And the other thing is...
Wait, let me answer that.
Okay.
Yeah, so what happens? What happens is you take...
Is it possible to get some light on the blackboard?
Yeah, but it won't help you understand it.
at least it gives us a chance.
Yeah, right. So that it's basically shock physics that we have in mind. So that when you go through a shock, right, then you're amplifying by m squared. So that's the amplification factor in the Montreux-Schlesinger paper. And it's 4 you know, in the adiabatic case, or whatever it is for the gamma that you're using. And then there's something happens. There's an extra term that we wrote down where you actually, you know, expand a bit, right? And then you get shocked again. But the next one is going to be another one if we assume the same Mach number, right? And then you get m to the fourth in the next one, etc. So this is a Markov process. Each one of these is independent, and then you get the distribution that I gave you, the log normal distribution with the time in it. So you get, if you do this, let me just get it up. If you do this, then you have, in when you put the dimensions back in, you have sigma squared, you have log m squared here, okay, times time. All right, so that's where the physics comes in. I didn't.
This is related to my original idea. Is in his 94 paper that perhaps you get log normal because you have a multiplicative process.
No, but everybody knows that. This is much more subtle, this argument. This is not that argument.
No, the way you intuit the math of the physics is the same argument. It is a multiplicative process. That's what you're saying.
I'm saying this in order to get the dispersion in my equations. But the problem is that the argument that it's a multiplicative process, which I've made for the everybody's made, right, is kind of specious. That it's certainly true, but it doesn't give you anything like dispersions. It doesn't give you anything like the actual laws, power laws. And I'm trying to. This method allows you to derive those.
But what I wonder if this is not the correct physics behind the PDF, because what we see in the isothermal case is that the high density field of the PDF is established extremely rapidly. You don't even need the dynamical time to establish it. In other words, you need to start from uniform condition, you turn on a random smooth velocity field. And even while you still have this kind of large scale smooth shocks,
right,
you already have the correct shape for the right hand side of the high density field of the PDF. And I bet that this would have been true the case. This would be the case also in the adiabatic equation state. It should not. The speed at which you establish the right hand side of the PDF is probably independent of the equation state.
Right.
It's very rapid. So
it's
clearly. So the physics that establishes that has nothing to do with shock after shock.
Right.
The first shock does it.
Right. Well, I think your computer program must be wrong. Okay, so I'd say it was impossible to do what you just said. So that if I'd seen that result, I would have gone back to look for the error in the program. I don't see any way of doing it with supersonic shocks. I mean, did you think of any reason why that would happen?
Yes, there is.
What is it?
The reason is that you get a log normal once you have an integral over a random function. The integral doesn't have to be an integral in time, where you integrate over a time much longer than an integral time. It can be an integral in space. So my interpretation would be that we have enough of a sample, spatially, even if we don't have it in time, so then we do get log normal anyway.
Okay, but I think you've got to have causality. I mean, if you start out with a distribution which is at moderate density, like 3 particles per cubic centimeter, it's even if you, you know, there's got to be some way that you're going to make densities of 10 to the sixth. And if you've just got supersonic shocks that are doing that in your problem and you don't have self-gravity, then I see no way that suddenly and immediately you're going to suddenly form.
I didn't say immediately. Dynamical time.
Okay, so I reckon there's a mistake in the program. Right.
We've done it a number of times. When you turn
We should look at it. Yeah, we should look at it because there has to be causality. There's got to be some reason to make.
For high density, the shocks, but you don't have to get shocks after shock. The first shock.
Well, how would you make it? I mean, you only get m squared per shot, right? If you've got a supersonic shock of, you know, characteristic m squared, and in your calculations, I think you had Mach numbers of 10, you're only going to get a factor of 100. You're not going to get to a million unless you've been hit many times. Yeah.
Where is self-gravity in this argument?
No, there's no self-gravity in this argument. I showed you the other simulations because they're beautiful and they've got self-gravity, the Wider-Norman ones. But in this argument, there isn't self-gravity.
So you're saying that self-gravity is irrelevant to get the.
In this particular meeting where everybody's obsessed with supersonic shocks, I think the analysis is independent of self-gravity. Right? Although that the destruction time, I envisage the destruction time is something like the free-fall time of the overall system, or when the lifetime of the cloud in some way. Yep.
So I wanted to ask about the content of what it means for it to be in, for a turbulent system to be in statistical equilibrium.
Whoa.
Sort of assuming for an adiabatic as opposed to an isothermal case. And because for an isothermal case, I know what it means, you know, because there's some fixed amount of thermal energy no matter what I do to it, and I increase the momentum and the kinetic energy, but I'll reach an equilibrium. For an adiabatic case, though, if I say drive the turbulence, the longer I drive, the more thermal energy I'm pumping into the system. Or the more thermal energy I'm taking out of the system, depending on the equation of states. So I know what it means to have statistical equilibrium for isothermal. What does it mean for adiabatic?
Right. This is a kinetic argument. It's not one for statistical equilibrium. I think you get to be a long way from statistical equilibrium. And
so, I mean, will this sort of analysis tell you, you know, given...
It will not. I have not written down. I wanted to, but I can't figure out how to do it. Don't write down the entropy of the system and try to, you know, do something with it. I can't figure out how to do that.
Well, I'm just wondering for the adiabatic case. I mean, this isn't just something that applies to your work.
No, I know. It's a very good point. It's a very good point. You are a long way when you go out onto these power law tails. You are a very long way from thermodynamic equilibrium, right, as you build up the density. Right. I mean, okay. Yeah.
Okay, related to this.
Well, it's a really important point. Yeah.
So do you see in the simulations, if you let it run for a longer time, do you see the PDF being saturated to a value, or does it evolve with time?
Right. In the case where, you know, you say in the Wada-Norman interstellar medium case, it becomes stationary. Right. And there is a for any given simulation, there is a characteristic dispersion for that log normal. But we could not find a scaling with Mach number. We really looked hard for that. And I suspect it's because our equation of state is so complex. It is not pure isothermal at all. It's a mixture of a number of isothermal components, if anything.
Well, I understand
it. You mean that the dispersion is independent?
No, we just couldn't find any law that...
It's a random function.
We couldn't figure it out.
It's just plotted and there is a law. Either it's random or there is no law. If it's random, you have to worry about your simulation.
No, you're quite right.
I mean, in that case, I can understand. I mean, it makes sense for that to reach a sort of saturated state because you have parts of the equation of state that are super isothermal and parts that are sub-isothermal.
Yeah.
So you have ways of both taking energy out and putting energy in.
Right.
And so, you know, if you put enough stuff in each part, you're okay.
It's not a box, though. I mean, essentially, it's radiating, of course.
So that
the actual energy source for the free energy that's going into the turbulence is it's not supernova. That's not the dominant thing. There's supernova going off all the time in this interstellar medium, but it's not that. It's actually slowly accreting. There's an effective viscosity, and so it's slowly accreting. So the whole material is releasing the binding energy of the galaxy, which is being used to fire up the free energy, giving the turbulence. But in this box I'm considering for this other problem, this more specific problem related to this workshop, there isn't any source of free energy, so your point is really important, right? And Paolo's point that the simulations might need work is completely correct. Right? This is true of our whole simulation. Yeah.
In your model, I mean, you always get M squared.
Well, M squared would be, this was...
Just by assumption, isn't it?
It's only constant M squared, but in fact, you should actually integrate over a range of M squareds if you...
I'm just trying to figure out, it's going to be,
if it's isothermal, you get M squared.
Formulation, would you expect that the dense parts actually move at a lower velocity dispersion than the rest, so that you typically see that...
Yeah.
I mean, that's one.
I know. We haven't done that yet, but
exactly.
It's a really important.
What I'm looking for is, like, what are the type of functions we can look for? Because the PDF, we want some sort of time evolution. So if I have a thin histogram, I want to know how much material goes from a certain density to a higher density.
Yes.
And how much moves the other direction.
Well, this equation is telling you this in first order, where this is constant m, and this would be log m squared on the bottom. It might be log 1 plus b m squared, but for high m, it's log of m squared, just like Paolo and Nordland found, right? And but that's it. That was the only one we could do, assuming constant m. Now we could... Oh, so another way to look at this problem, I forgot to say, is that you can translate all this into an actual diffusion equation. Well, let me put in the real variables. Okay, and this diffusion coefficient, in this case m squared, is essentially just m squared, right? But what you're asking me is very important. What happens when this is now a function of rho and other variables that you're diffusing? And we haven't done that. But when you think about problems that we know about, like particle acceleration and all sorts of other Markov processes, then in general, this diffusion coefficient is a function of the state, the variables that you've got in your system. And so that's a very good point too.
What I'm curious about is whether one could sort of split it up into two terms. So yep. One that, the volumes of space that go from low density to high density.
Yep.
And the other one that goes from high density to low density.
We haven't got a feedback term.
Once we're, once you have a pulled-in distribution, it's hard to say which volume goes out.
Right.
But in the numerical realization, now to actually measure.
Well, that'd be terrific, because presumably, this is any distribution, but let's say it's the cloud distribution, so it's log normal and then power law. That what happens is when you destroy, you go back here. Right, you make stars, but you actually go back that way. We've left this out. This is not in our calculation. We've just said there is a destruction term, and you feed in stuff here in some way. But in order to close the feedback loop, you have to look at this cascade, and you have to look at it coming back. Quite right. This would be great.
With all these models, I think because it seems these type of distributions are easy to produce. Those would be the type of statistics you could easily distinguish.
Would be fantastic. Okay, so this is fun physics, but I think there is a real point to this. And if one could begin to do incredibly careful calculations and look at essentially the statistical mechanics or the diffusion of material in different mass bins and how all this is put together, that would be a beautiful physics-type experiment for everybody to look at. We have the time in here, so it's this. So what's happening is it's diffusing essentially the density, the log of the density, so log rho, is diffusing with the coefficient d squared t. It's making a random walk, right? Okay. Now, random walks sort of look like this, but in Levy distributions with long power law tails, as Carl knows, they actually have jumps where they go very long distances. So that once you've set up your distribution with your long power law tail, then in principle you can have big jumps. So you'd be able to see that. If you plotted the growth of a density element as a function of time, just like that. Yep.
Are you able to include the feedback on magnetic fields from magnetic fields just by modification?
Putting in the magnetic case.
Because your shocks now are going to change depending on the orientation.
Right. So
limiting compression.
So in the isothermal case, I think this changes to MA, right? And in the adiabatic case, it doesn't. It's the same. But then you were asking me. So you have this sort of generalization almost immediately, but that is, it's much harder than I just wrote down. But you mean that you wanted to address the feedback when it was magnetized? Was that right, Adam?
Yeah, it's limiting compression.
Yeah. Well, we haven't thought about that, but it would be... I mean, certainly when you destroy these clouds, what happens in the models? You just put it back into the low-density medium, or... Do you have cloud destruction in the models?
Well, which models are you referring to?
Any models.
No, I know. They are periodic boundary conditions, so they cannot have destruction.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
I don't do this. But when you drive the simulations and you get a fixed density PDF, clearly you still have shocks. So
yes.
You're going to identity.
That's right. You're still driving it.
By definition, you must have regions that go from identity to
the right.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's a bouncing, especially if it's
yes. Right. Oh, that's true. Yes, you do.
So
right. And that's really looked at by the dispersion, you know, at any given point. That is that I am moving out, like I drew this wrong. I mean, I actually come backwards sometimes. So I go to lower density. Is that's what you're asking, I think. So that in some, if you take a mean density element, right, an arbit, any given density element, and you look at its history, it will go from high density to low density to higher to lower, and then it will gradually
control this much more. You know, I mean, magnetic fields are going to
be
important. Your theory.
Well, we have to let Telemachus talk.
Can you first, because
yes.
You said the modulo was the mass distribution, but I didn't see the connection between the density distribution and the mass
distribution. Oh, that is a very good point. I guess I've been impressed by these papers that say that they're the same. Right?
No, I never said that.
Somebody did. Charlie Larder or someone. That isn't that the same? The clouds and the IMF have similar.
No, you're talking about density distribution and mass
distribution. Oh, you have to connect it. Yes, yeah. You're right. And so in your paper, right, you connect it by talking about the Frackle dimension, I think. Isn't that right?
Far spectrum of the third
one. So, yeah.
So I don't think that, I mean, not that the idea there is that the PDX is not enough, that you need scaling. So the mass distribution of starting solar, you have to rely on the scaling.
It is right. Yep, I agree. I tried to sweep that under the rug, but you're quite right. You have to put the mass in the way you... I mean, the only way I know of doing it right is how you guys did it. So.
I mean, unless you say, okay, I have density and each region of the same size becomes a star, then the PDF...
No, there's there's a jump to go to the IMF. Yep.
But in your theory, is there distinctions between a Lagrangian fluid element and a Eulerian fluid element? So if I look in a... trace particle law.
Yep.
And that's how you've written down the equation.
That is how I've written them down.
But since there is, you know, no volume, it's a statistical one, I'm wondering whether it shouldn't already also apply to Eulerian.
Right. Okay. Yep. There's a gray area here. So I wish Chris were here. He could answer all these tough questions, but there's a grey area between considering a fixed Eulerian grid and then writing them down as we did, moving with a given shock or something, right? And Tom is right, we haven't sorted that out in any great detail yet. But I hope to do that. Telemachus better, talk better.